Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to chat to my friends about the films and the series that we're loving. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop.
Did you see the thing yesterday on the TV?
How's it?
Good morning, Russell.
Hi there.
How you guys doing?
I'm good, dude. How are you doing?
I'm lekker, man.
Yeah, no complaints.
It's October.
Yeah.
Jeez.
It's October.
I panicked because I have to do something on the last day of every month for work, and I was like, fuck.
It's October. And it's, jeez, 1 month to go until the wedding.
Oh, my fuck, lord.
Dude.
Jesus. Okay, we'll get into it. Thank you for wandering into our video store.
Yeah.
We've got ourselves a Graham with us today.
Hello.
A G-Force, who, when not working a shift at the video store, is an editor.
Correct.
Then we've got ourselves a Cole Matthews.
Yeah.
Who, when not working at the video store, what do you call yourself, Cole?
I'm a digital copywriter.
Digital copyright. All right, that's a good one. And then my name is Russell, and I own The Bioscope, which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. But we come together once a week, and we work in our beautiful and lovely video store where there's lots of movies and lots of series up on the shelves, and we're here to just help you figure out what you can watch. So this is the Clerks episode, where it's the three of us having a good chat about all the film and TV that we're watching. It's a month to go until the wedding.
My wedding. That's awesome, dude.
So it's worth mentioning at this point that this podcast is a very personal endeavor.
Yeah.
That takes up a lot of personal time, which I want to give. But in a couple of weeks' time, as we get closer to the wedding, there might be a little break.
Right.
Or there might be a little change
in
programming in some degree where we then do the wedding and honeymoon.
Let's have
and
a
stuff.
Wedding special.
Maybe something wedding related building up, but then in the weeks of the sort of wedding and the honeymoon, I think we'll figure it out. But we'll put out some kind of filler episode of some sort.
I'm sure the boys can manage the stall while the boss is away.
That could also happen.
Yeah.
That could also definitely happen.
Please listen to the My Fair Lady song, I'm Getting Married in the Morning, before you get married, the day before.
Okay. Send it to me.
Okay, cool.
We've had some good films this week.
Mm.
Mm.
I went to a special screening of Lee,
nice.
Which is the new Kate Winslet biopic.
Mm-hmm.
Biopic, which is in cinemas now, so I want to talk about that.
Cool.
What are the movies? You guys watched Transformers.
We saw Transformers yesterday.
Transformers 1.
Yep.
Yeah.
Then, there's lots of TV.
There's a lot of stuff to talk about today.
Yeah, I binged watched Nobody Wants This, which is the big Netflix show of the week, so to speak. Cole, you've watched a lot?
Yeah, I've watched the season 2 of Ryan Murphy's Monsters series, and the Will and Harper documentary, which I'm excited to talk about.
Yeah, the Monsters one, this is about the two twins that kill their parents.
Not twins. I think they're just brothers.
Are they just brothers?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. There is lots to talk about.
Yes.
All right. But before that, we're going to do a quick round of Hey, Did You Guys See?
Bye. Yeah.
I'll kick it off.
Nice.
Hey, did you guys see that Cat Person is now on Showmax?
Okay.
We spoke about it at length many months ago when it was in cinemas.
Yes.
Shout out to Christina, who was a part of our team for a moment. And I went on a little movie date with her, and we both loved it. It's a cute little indie. It's really about the nuance of dating and power dynamics and weird dudes and toxic relationships and moments that have perhaps gone too far. But it's funny and it's cool and it's gonna get lost. It'll be deep within your Showmax algorithm. So if you're looking for something a little different, highly recommend Cat Person.
Cool. Hey, did you guys see the trailer for Sinners?
No. What is that?
This is the new Ryan Coogler film.
Okay.
So Ryan Coogler's a guy who did Creed. He did Black Panther.
Okay.
This is a movie with Michael B. Jordan playing twins.
Okay.
And it's a period horror movie. So it looks like it's set in like the 50s maybe. maybe 40s.
Okay.
And it's about the twins that that Michael B. Jordan plays returning to their hometown and finding something horrible is happening. The nature of the horror is unclear in the trailer.
Okay.
But it looks scary. Something.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool.
Oh, nice.
It actually looks really good.
Okay.
And Michael B. Jordan is just like, that dude's a powerhouse, man.
He is.
No, he's just good. Got like that screen presence. Like,
yeah.
He just like dominates the screen really effectively.
It's his eyes. He's a handsome man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, did you guys see that Megalopolis, Francis Ford Coppola's magnum opus, or professed magnum opus, self-professed, had a worse opening weekend than Borderlands?
Oh, Jesus.
And domestically, it opened to $4 million.
That's worse than Cats.
Is that worse than Cats?
I think that's worse than Cats.
Because Borderlands was worse than Cats.
Yeah.
And if this is worse than...
I think Cats had a $10 million opening weekend.
Shit, so poor Francis. Yo. Sorry, Mr. Coppola. So, bets as security, like in order to self-finance his film on a budget of $150 million, I think.
Something like that.
He put up $100 million of his wineries.
Yeah.
His own money, went into this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw some cool videos of people going into it, and then there cuts to them afterwards. So it was people going like, yeah, it should be cool. I don't know. I'm scared. I don't know. And then it just cuts to them going, what was that?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I think, listen, we've spoken a lot about Megalopolis. One of the big things was a misstep, but at least had an interesting intention in its marketing, which was to say that a lot of his films were misunderstood or kind of not necessarily praised
the
at the time.
Was that the trailer with all the fake quotes?
Yeah. But and so the fake quotes was a big media blunder.
Mm.
But I think the sentiment was there.
It is.
And there was a reason why they chose that angle, because that did exist. I think they just chose the made up quotes or AI.
Yeah, I mean,
you called it AI. AI put that out. But I think often these movies are misunderstood at the time.
Yeah, they are definitely like precedent for that Blade Runner. You know, there's been quite a few movies. The Shining is a big one.
Movies
that were maligned at the time and are now classics.
But yeah, let's see.
Yes.
Yeah. It's all about what rewards you, I think, is one of the big sort of clinches. That if it's just a drag through the mud, no one's going to then eventually start loving the drag through the mud. If it's just a wild, bonkers, crazy ride that is in some ways enjoyable, then it stands a chance of garnering something. Or,
So this is, the third... like bomb potentially for Lionsgate. So it's Borderlands, The Crow, Megalopolis.
Whoops.
Yeah, sorry to them.
Bad, yeah.
Some bad choices.
Well, on that, hey, did you guys see that there's like a live component to Megalopolis?
Yes.
And people are wondering how this could possibly play out as this film rolls out. So it seems as if there's a section in the movie, and this is one version of watching it. So I guess you don't have to watch this movie with this component, but it's like the desired component, which is when someone in the audience, I believe it's
a plant,
I believe it's a person hired to do this,
will
get up in the front of the cinema and ask these questions live.
Yeah, or I think it's just the one question. There's like a scene with like a press conference or something like that.
Yeah,
and they ask the main character a question.
And then he answers it.
Yeah. So I've brought up before the Weekly Planet podcast. They had a dude on, another Australian guy who went to a thing who was the guy who asked the question. So he was like chosen out of the audience. They were like, you're going to ask this question.
Okay. Yeah. Because that's what I did gather. It's someone
chosen.
Is chosen.
Yes.
And then they've got a question that they have to ask.
Yeah.
But it's so strange. It's such an interesting
choice.
I mean, I guess it's refreshing and different. That's why we're talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's just interesting to play with the idea of cinema, where all of a sudden now the cinema experience becomes a theater moment just for a second, which is interesting.
Yeah. Speaking of Lionsgate, hey, did you guys see the trailer for Ballerina?
I saw that it was out.
Yes. So this is a John Wick spinoff. It's set in like the same universe, so to speak, as John Wick. And it looks like John Wick, but a girl is what it looks like.
Yeah,
it looks like the exact same story.
It's Ana de Armas.
Yes.
So it's the same character.
No, she's not.
I'm thinking of Spectre.
Oh, yes. Yeah, she is in Spectre. Yes.
Yeah.
No, but it's the same, like, hey, someone's out for revenge. Hey, they go to the weird hotel. Hey, let's shoot a bunch of people.
And I suppose like all four John Wick movies were the same thing.
Yes.
You know, so they can do a fifth one.
Yeah. Ana de Armas is my pink slip celebrity. What's the term? Like if I was allowed one, yes. My pass.
With opportunity to, present
I think
itself.
She's so gorgeous.
Yeah.
I think she is so gorgeous.
Yeah.
She's wonderful.
Hey, did you guys see Lady Gaga has announced a companion album to Joker?
Okay.
That's called Harlequin.
Oh, right.
Okay.
So Joker Folie à Deux,
yes,
is on its way. In the week that this episode is coming out, it's going to hit cinemas this weekend.
Oh, wow.
The Bioscope is screening it. The fact that you say, oh, wow.
I didn't even realize it was
out
this week.
Is a problem.
Mm.
So I think it's interesting.
That's very unusual.
That it's kind of just sneaking in.
Especially for like a $200 million massive studio film.
It's a little worrying, sure. But I do think it could be interesting if there is an approach to treat it like a small little indie.
Yeah.
But it isn't. It's a very big, expensive movie.
It's a huge studio film.
So there are big billboards around Joburg.
Mm.
So they are going for it.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it is worrying that it's kind of snuck up on us.
Yes.
I've obviously seen it coming.
Yeah.
Tickets are selling at the Bioscope and they're doing well.
Mm.
I think it's going to be cool. I've got a little sneaky suspicion that it's going to be cool.
Okay.
I've got a suspicion that it's not. It's a little bit like Tarantino.
Right.
The world has an idea of what it could be, but yes. It's actually something different.
Okay.
And it kind of always was something different.
Right.
I've heard that it's where the previous film was a dog whistle for incels. I've heard that he. I've heard that he makes this film as deliberately not a film for those people.
Okay.
So it's like a fuck you to the people that sympathized with Joker in the wrong way.
Right.
You know, the people that think that Patrick Bateman's really cool,
yes,
in American Psycho.
Okay.
He like makes a film that's like, no, we don't want to make movies for you. This isn't
interesting.
You know?
Okay. Apparently. We're gonna give you a musical.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. One last little thing. Cool. Hey, did you guys see? Obviously we lost Maggie Smith.
Yes.
Yeah.
The beloved actress of most famously Harry Potter.
Probably.
Yeah.
It's a most, at
but
least a younger
had
people.
A world of a career.
Yeah.
And I also saw this morning Chris Christopherson passed away.
Yes.
Who was
Hectic.
More famous as a musician.
Musician, yeah.
But he was in an earlier incarnation of A Star Is Born.
Oh, yes.
And that's when you realized
that
there were five of those before the Lady Gaga Bradley Cooper one.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was interesting to see that Maggie Smith won two Oscars in her career. A supporting role for a movie called California Suite.
Okay.
And best lead for a movie called The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie.
Right.
And I just find it interesting that there's just so many movies that get made.
Yeah.
So many. Eh?
And how like there could be this, you know, this big movie that someone wins this Oscar for.
Yeah.
And we've just never heard of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's also had such a long career.
No, sure.
She probably won them decades ago. I don't even know what years they were.
78.
Okay.
And 69.
Okay.
Oh, shucks.
So it is a long,
before any of us were even born.
Long before. But it's just, I just find it interesting how it's just some films just disappear.
Yeah.
Like, it's one thing to be like, oh, I remember that. It comes up every now and again. Mm. But it's just like, I've never heard anyone talk.
Yeah.
About the you know.
Sure, and there were four other nominations.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she's been nominated a lot.
But I saw an interview with Graham Norton that she did, where she was talking about how she only really felt the effects of fame when Downton Abbey happened. She said with Harry Potter, it wasn't really there. She could still go to places.
Okay.
And people wouldn't really bother her or recognize her too much. But it was Downton Abbey that like made England unbearable for her.
I suppose it was her first hit in the age of social media.
Yeah.
You know.
Mm.
Yeah. So speaking of that and the effects of social media and how it changes our world.
Yeah.
That was one of the chief things I wanted to talk about when it comes to the movie Lee.
Okay.
Sure.
So let's move on to films.
Cool.
So last week I watched Lee.
Yes.
Which is the biopic about the photographer Lee Miller.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now we're talking, this is all set around World War II, and it tells the story of this incredible woman's life, where she was first a model.
Okay.
Then she became a photographer, and this is in the era of the 40s, where they're sitting around these picnics in France. Some of them are topless. It was glorious to sort of have this kind of you know, beautiful, you know, French countryside frolic.
Yes.
Talking about him being Hitler.
Yes.
Like, I can't see him being a problem. And I think it's going to disappear and everything. So it was quite cool to see the start of World War II.
Mm.
And she then wants to photograph the war. She wants to go into the front lines, which as a woman was almost literally impossible. They weren't letting her go into war. They weren't letting her sit in press briefings. They weren't letting her go to the front line.
Right.
So it's really much, very much the start of World War II. And then what's very interesting is a lot of the movie is about the falling of World War II. They seem to sort of cut out the middle, which I think is kind of interesting because we tend to sort of know this.
Yes.
Right.
But not a lot of people talk about the aftermath of the war.
Yes.
And especially, and this is the point I wanted to make, is there are these incredible scenes where her and Andy Samberg's character, which is very cool seeing Andy Samberg play this kind of serious role, are discovering the atrocities of World War II. And you realize in that moment that we live in this age of like immediate information. Like when Maggie Smith passed away, five outlets on Instagram immediately had posted the fact that she'd passed away. But you can imagine in the mid-1940s when the European Holocaust war had come to an end, people discovered how fucking crazy it was.
Yeah,
I don't think people knew
the
extent of the extermination of the Jews. And you also discover that a lot of media outlets, you know, were at the end of the war, they wanted to celebrate. They didn't want to show pictures of these piles of dead Jews.
Right.
Or like mass graves.
And
you know?
Also, like, you can imagine it took a long time to, like, get those films, get those photos processed, sent to other outlets, and who's going to publish them. And so,
an American kind of just wants to focus on, hey, we beat Hitler.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We saved the world.
It was interesting and immediately made me think about something like the Ukraine war, which I remember being labeled, this is the first TikTok war.
Right.
And I thought that was such an interesting comment at the time when that happened, where they were like, this is the first war that we've experienced that will be covered by TikTok. That's which is so usually, you know, little girls fucking dancing. Right. You know, so like here it is, like really giving us this immediate, incredible coverage.
Wow.
By the citizens on the ground.
Yeah. Like flipping live videos.
But by the everyman on the street, as opposed to just the media outlets that only wanted you to see certain propaganda.
Mm. Yeah, it's like, I don't know if you saw B-Sun, who's basically been a journalist on the ground, like a self-made journalist in Gaza.
Okay.
And she partnered with A24 to be called, I think it's called, My Name is B-Sun and I'm Still Here.
Okay.
And she won the Emmy for best news coverage short form.
Oh, okay.
No. So it's like TikTok videos are becoming a valid form of news reporting, which is like wild. So
that
it's
is
like
interesting, yeah.
It's like the way we think about the Vietnam War, the way we're taught, is that the major factor that played a role in America like rallying against the war was television, right?
Yes.
It was the first televised war.
Yeah.
And then now you have this further evolution where it's more immediate than that.
Totally. So Kate Winslet plays Lee.
Mm.
There's a lovely framing device of the story, and I don't want to give too much away, but it does it in a very cool way. It's worth noting the director is a woman called Ellen Kuras, who is a cinematographer.
Okay.
So I thought that was very cool to see this World War II movie sort of done through the eyes of a director who is a cinematographer. Mm. She shot like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and Blow and Be Kind Rewind and Summer of Sam.
It's a little bit of a legend.
So, you know, these are these crew members that perhaps in the world are very well known, but it's cool that she's moved on to directing, but you can imagine that this film is visually stunning.
Okay, nice.
And a lot of it is in this like early morning, this like misty dark as they sort of you know, these like smoky trains,
yes,
you know, where they are in and around a place like Auschwitz.
Okay.
And it's, oh, it's slow, it's brooding, it's lovely. Nice. It's a solid, solid movie.
Nice.
And it could be some Oscar stuff.
Okay.
I think so.
I think it might not be because I saw that it was a 2023 release domestically, American.
Oh.
So I think it might have missed its Oscar.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. When. All right. That's me on that.
Cool.
You guys went and watched the
Transformers 1. Yes.
Okay.
It's a lot of fun.
So much fun.
Yeah. I think Transformers works better. I mean, it makes sense because that's where it started.
Yes.
It started as an animated series. Yeah. Into series is a little generous. It was an ad for toys.
Yes.
The way they used to advertise toys back in the day, they would make a TV show.
Yes.
Just
like Street Sharks.
Street Sharks. I mean, G.I. Joe, all that stuff came from, you know, He-Man. They all came from
Dragon
this idea
flies,
of...
maximize.
Was that a show?
Fly through the skies.
I remember the toy. I didn't realize flies. It was a toy. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. Okay. It's definitely aimed at a younger audience. It's.
I was about to say,
yeah.
How is it for Okies in their 30s?
I said to Graham at the end of that movie that if I was 7,
yes,
I would be rabid.
Okay.
It is. Cool. It feels like those kids movies that came out when you were a kid.
Yes.
And you were just like obsessed. And you wouldn't stop thinking about it and you want to go watch it 50 million times.
I think if you're someone who has kids and you were a fan of Transformers, this is like the perfect way to introduce your kids to Transformers.
Yes.
Because the Michael Bay films are like too violent and too lascivious for kids.
Yes, exactly.
This what is was like that nice word you used?
Lascivious.
Lascivious.
Oh, what does that mean?
Lascivious means like, I suppose, carrying very strong... Think of the shots where Megan Fox is like bent over a motorbike repairing it. And we
think
don't
of
go
any
from...
shot of Megan Fox.
That is, yeah, that's it's not far. It's not too deep filed. It's right there. I can see it. Yeah, yeah. Carry on.
Yeah, that's
yeah, exactly.
That's
like when you think of Transformers, why are you thinking of Megan Fox's ass?
Yes.
You know? That's the problem with the live action films
in a nutshell.
Oh, so
Lascivious has got a sexual nature to it.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the story, I think, for me, was far more solid. And I think it's like a little movie. It was far more well packaged in terms of its plot and its characters than any of the live action movies. It just feels like it's also, which is a weird thing to say, not as much, but when I watched Star Wars Clone Wars, I was like, oh, this is better as an animation. It's great live action.
Yes.
But it's fucking great as an animation. There's something about the medium that makes it sit. And I was like, kind of excited for Transformers for the first time in my life.
But it's computer generated.
Yeah, it's all CG. Yeah.
CG to the point where, like, in theory, it's very similar to the way that those characters were portrayed in the live action.
Just, I wouldn't say so.
No, they're designed
simplified.
Much more simplified.
Okay, so this is what I was going to say, is that it did seem very simplified to the point where in my ignorant perception, I was like, this looks a bit cheap.
Okay. No, I wouldn't say so. I think it looks pretty good.
No, it's animated by ILM.
Yeah.
You know, the boys who do Star Wars and Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, Best of the World.
Are there any girls doing
Pioneers.
It?
ILM.
You just said the boys who do.
Sorry.
But yeah, I think one of the reasons...
I just love calling you out on that.
Yeah. I was like,
You're the most...
liberal.
Correct in that, in that phrasing.
So
and I know it comes from a funny... I'm just making jokes.
No, but totally.
I think one of the reasons, like you said, it like this feels more like settled as a story, so to speak, is in a way the live action films rely on this story.
Yes.
Because it's a prequel. And like all of this backstory, it kind of needs to be dumped on us in the live action one as well.
It's always like exposition. A flashback thing,
You know,
because this was an origin.
Yeah, this
story.
Is like before Optimus Prime was Optimus Prime. And he was Orion Pax.
Yeah, he was a normal little minor robot.
Yes.
And him and, what did they call Megatron?
D13, D12, something like that. I think it was D13 before he was, they were minors.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so Brian Tyree Henry.
Yes.
Is the voice of Megatron.
I don't know who that is.
Remember Bullet Train?
Yeah.
The guy who was a partner with Aaron Taylor Johnson. Yeah. Hilarious.
Okay.
And also famous from Atlanta.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
It's Spider-Verse.
And Chris Hemsworth's the.
Yeah, he's Optimus
Prime.
Yeah.
Okay.
Scarlett Joe's in it. Yeah. Keegan-Michael Key.
Okay.
Like the voice acting
John
overall.
Hamm.
Oh, John Hamm, yeah.
Yeah.
Like the voice acting was actually really fucking
It
impressive.
Is pretty good, yeah.
Like, I had a great time with it.
Yes. Okay. I think, yeah, it's one of those challenging things where there is a voice of Optimus Prime.
Yes.
Like, Peter Cullen has been Optimus Prime since the 80s, and he's basically the only guy who's ever done it.
Yes.
So now to be like, oh, there's a new voice for Optimus Prime.
And you can see Chris Hemsworth going on a little journey there vocally.
Yes.
Where it's like his voice changes when he becomes a Prime.
Yeah.
And then it sounds more true to what that guy did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. But overall, I think you guys have summed it up well, which is like, if you were a kid, this would be fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah. If you have kids, I think your kids will love it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Highly recommended.
All right. Then, Cole, you managed to watch Will and Harper.
Yes. Okay.
It was on my list of what to watch this weekend now that it had come out, because I've spoken about it. I had to choose between that and Wolves, which is the George Clooney, Brad Pitt film.
Yeah.
Yes.
But you watched Will and Harper, which I think looks charming and lovely and amazing.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. You know, it's fundamentally a wholesome road trip movie, except it's a documentary. And for those who don't know, the premise is basically that Will Ferrell discovers that one of his best friends is an SNL writer that he met at the start of his tenure at SNL. And this writer's name at the time was Andrew Steele. And they became really close friends because they both started around the same time and they was trying to, you know, make a name for themselves in that world. And then I think it was, I don't know about timing, but a year before this documentary takes place, Andrew announces that they are transitioning. And her new name will be Harper Steele. And there's a whole letter that she sends out to a whole bunch of friends, including her children.
Okay.
So then there's a process of learning that happens there. But then Will suggests, hey, so you're discovering yourself. I'm discovering you as Harper.
Mm.
Let us go on a road trip together. Because Harper's quick to establish that throughout her life, she's been like a chronic road tripper across America. It's one of her favorite, was one of her favorite things to do. So she would go to all these places. She would go to roadhouses. She'd like camp on the side of the road, you know, stop by the Grand Canyon, pull out a chair and have a beer and like meet people in bars all the time. But now Harper's transitioned to a woman and Will suggests, let's like go through this familiar territory and then see what that means to you now as Harper instead of Andrew.
Right.
And also I need to get to know you as Harper.
Yeah.
And it's like a peeling of the onion, to use the Shrek metaphor, where you start to like see Will learning and trying to understand. So it's like a really good gateway into understanding the world through a trans person's eyes.
Yeah, that's the way I saw it coming. I was like, we needed someone accessible, like Will Ferrell, who we all know and love, to help normalize this experience, because we're going to then see the world through his eyes. And this could be a really valuable toolkit for many people on a huge scale, being Netflix, to get a sense of this experience.
And it's tough half of the time, because Harper like pulls up old journals, old photos, and talks about the space that she had been in for such a long time, like suicidal, how she felt in preschool. You know, when she like naturally just went into the girls' line at preschool and then a teacher pulled her over to the boys' line. It's like, no, you can't stand in that line.
Yeah.
And then boys made fun of her. And I think that to like give you a nutshell through one event that happens is they go to Texas. So they go through a whole bunch of red states, right?
Mm.
And obviously like being trans is now the popular witch hunts in America, right? Mm. There's always been like a flavor of the season for like what minority group you're going to hate.
Yes.
You know, and now it's trans people. And they go to a Texas roadhouse and they see a sign on the side of the road that says you can have like a 76-pound steak. I can't remember what it was. But this giant steak and you have to finish it in an hour, you get it for free.
Right.
So Will packed his Sherlock Holmes outfit from the film he did with John C. Reilly.
I remember that movie.
And he's like, I want to do this. I want to do this as... And it's really interesting in this like roadhouse or restaurants. There's like a dais, a raised platform, where there's a table and there's a clock above it. Mm. And then Will sits down with Harper.
Okay.
And the whole time Will's like, this is my friend Harper. And the guy says, how should I introduce you to the restaurant? He's like, Mr. Sherlock Holmes from England and Miss Harper Steele. And the guy announces, Mr. Sherlock Holmes from England and Harper Steele. mishap is still, there's like this effort to try, and, which makes sense, which can be forgiving for. But then what you see is that in this like very focused and isolated space, suddenly all the attention's on Harper through Will.
Right.
In a red flag state.
Mm. Mm.
So it's kind of like, and then they show the aftermath of it on social media.
Okay.
Where you see the tweets and the words, and then Will just like completely breaks down because he realized he exposed Harper through his celebrity. And it's to all the hate.
Yeah.
And I think there was one tweet that called him like a neo-Nazi pedophile or something. And he's like, cool.
Oh,
You know, so it's like you get exposed to all of that as well.
I think people need to also, just you touched on it a bit earlier. People need to see that experience and feel that experience for that one individual.
Yes.
And understand it, because that's what the whole point of our society changing to accommodate and help these people. Yeah. It's to help that single individual.
Yes.
And yes, you've used a great word over the years with the video store where we talk about like the birthing pains of this.
Yes.
Where someone else might feel how this is a problem and infringing on them because they're just normal. But it's like there's individuals that are having a really tough time.
Yeah.
And the world just needs the toolkit and the understanding to understand that person. So
yeah, exactly.
Like the more unisex bathrooms that exist in the world, the better. So we're changing for the better. It doesn't fucking affect you.
Yeah.
It doesn't affect you, but it helps you.
Exactly.
Because I'll never forget having my mind blown from a lecturer at WITS who was like, I struggle with gender because I'm in a body that is ambiguous. It's female, but it looks male. So I don't see gender as clearly because it's really weird and fluid for me.
Mm.
Because if I go into a girl's bathroom, they could beat me up because they think I'm a guy.
Yes.
And I can't go into a guy's bathroom because they could think I'm a female.
Yes.
So it's like life is weird for me. And you're like, oh God, like I fucking get it.
Yeah.
You know, and exactly. It's like, hey, let's just have unisex bathrooms.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck, that solves that.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we can just move on.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Then it's like, we don't have to keep talking about it.
Yeah.
Just help them understand, you know, have everyone sort of get the way this works.
Yeah,
exactly. It's like competing the fact that, hey, nothing new has happened in terms of these people existing. They've always been there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, but now our society hasn't ever acknowledged that before.
Because every now and again, those individuals might have committed suicide.
Yeah.
And it's like, let's just stop that from happening.
Yeah.
Let's just like give them an okay life where it's like someone could recognize, oh, you're very much a dude, but you've got long hair and you want to be a woman. Mm. Cool. I'll call you whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah,
let's just get on with life.
And it's really cool as well to
you're
think
not weird.
About.
It's not odd.
Yeah.
Let's just get on with it.
And the thing there is it's really interesting to see Will and a person he's had a relationship with for 30 years, whatever.
Yeah, trying like, to kind of undo it.
Yeah, but just immediately going, Harper, she, her, Harper, she, her. Like, and it's like, oh, that isn't hard. That isn't hard to do.
Yeah.
It's like it happens all the time in school. Remember when your teacher got married and you had to change your surname?
Yeah.
Yes.
No, we can do this. And also just to be honest and fun about it as well. Like we don't have to be, you know, so stringent and militant. Like there's a great part that's in the trailer where he goes like, have you become a shitter driver since becoming a woman?
Yeah. It's like,
and it's like,
off.
That's cool. We need that.
Yeah,
let's
exactly.
Just break the ice of it and let's just have fun.
And it is a shit ton of fun. Like,
okay, good.
It's good to see that. I mean, you know this. But you see all the affection you have for Will Ferrell as a funny character in the movies he plays.
Yes.
Yeah.
In his personality, there's a moment when they go up in a hot air balloon to do a toast with another famous SNL actor you'll recognize. I can't remember his name. But then there's Will's like, shh, shh, you hear the dogs barking. And like miles below, there are dogs barking.
Mm.
And then he shouts off the side of the balloon, hey, shut up, put your dogs away. The neighborhood's sick of your dogs. And that like hilarious voice of him.
Yeah.
And it's just like this levity that he provides that's interspersed through all of these really heavy moments. It's like the soundtrack's amazing. It's a wholesome road trip, friendship, exploration, and adventure.
Lovely.
So highly recommended for anyone who wants a good, wholesome, solid watch.
Nice.
This is Will and Harper. That's on Netflix.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Should we get on to TV shows?
Sure.
Do it.
Okay. Where are we with what we're watching?
I'm watching as it's releasing Rings of Power, Agatha All Along, and finished watching Monsters Season 2.
Okay.
I am wading joyfully through Only Murders in the Building.
Okay.
Over on Disney Plus, which is just getting more and more like on par with all the other seasons. Nice. It's so great. Nearly done with what's it called? Monkey Man. Fuck. Oh, okay. No, not Monkey Man. Bad Monkey. Bad Monkey on Apple TV Plus.
Cool.
And still going through Chaos, which is on Netflix, which is the Greek one. But I smashed in a good single binge. Nobody Wants This.
I have no idea what this is.
Okay. Never heard of that.
Let me talk about that quick, because then we can then get into the
updates. What's Graham watching? Are you watching any series?
Oh, I watched Twilight of the Gods.
Okay.
Okay.
Also a Netflix show. We can get onto that.
Okay.
We must also start watching Penguin on Showmax.
Is it on Showmax?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay, Russ.
Okay, so Nobody Wants This is a real hamburger of a TV show. Like, easy to just consume. Lovely. It's effectively a romantic comedy. It's Kristen Bell, who we all know from Veronica Mars and The Good Place. And we've got Adam Brody, who we all know from OC and a bunch of other things. The basic premise is that it's this fun story of a romance. She is a host of a podcast, which can get a little scandalous. It's themed around sex and relationships and breaking the sort of stigma of, you know, what we don't want to talk about. And he is a rabbi.
Okay.
Like a young, cool, handsome rabbi who's on the cusp of becoming like the head rabbi of the temple.
Okay.
She's obviously not Jewish.
Yes.
And here comes this relationship, which is just this happy, fun, beautiful, quippy, witty relationship.
Right.
But of course the big conflict is the fact that she's not Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
He would kind of need her to be Jewish.
As a rabbi.
If he wanted to become the head rabbi.
Yes.
Sure.
But also the fact that in that world, everybody knows your business and everybody kind of, you know, you're an example for your tribe, your temple people. And she's got this kind of scandalous, sort of outspoken, a bit naughty kind of life. But it's delightful. It's fun. And I think what's interesting about it, and this is the point I'd love to sort of get across, is that I think it's just such a great example of a 2024 romantic comedy.
Right.
Where there is the conflicts of these sort of fun situational comedy bits, but they're not the meat of the joke. They just are plot devices. Oh, he thinks that, they think this, there's this mistaken identity or this sort of conflict.
Yeah.
But 10 years ago, that would be like the thing.
Mm.
That would be the meat of the joke, of the episode. They'd make every morsel of it.
Yeah, if this was an Adam Sandler comedy.
Yeah, when you think of the American Pie kind of humor jokes, you know, where you're stuck in this moment and the person walks in or this awkward whatever's. This show has it, but it's... You keep thinking when you watch it, like, this is going to get worse, it's going to get worse, but it doesn't. It sort of, it rides past it. It goes further.
Right.
Cool.
If someone didn't know, but they thought this, it doesn't ride out for too long. Eventually, that person just calls and it gets cleared up.
Right.
But they use it in the same way that we've always had it, which is to engage in conflict, make the show interesting, give them odds to whether or not their relationship is going to work or not work.
Yeah.
But it just becomes more than that, which I think is really interesting.
Cool.
And it's smarter because we as an audience are smarter. We don't want to just make a meal out of this little moment.
Yes.
Yes.
But it can still be used. So I think that part's interesting. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Did I articulate myself?
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
You did. In the IMDb logline, they describe her as irascible.
That's a nice
word. Which is a lovely word, which means having or showing a tendency to be easily angered.
Okay.
Would you describe her as irascible?
Easily angered? No, that doesn't really quite feel right. She's not too angry in the show.
Right.
Interesting. I wonder why they choose to describe her that way.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just that like she's passionate about those opinions that she has. Oh, and she expresses them strongly.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Irascible. Mm. And what was that other one? What was that nice word from earlier?
Oh, I can't even remember.
Oh, no.
You just, you,
oh,
you
lascivious.
Had it in your...
Lascivious, thank you,
I was
you,
like,
Cole.
You had it in your brain.
Yes.
Lascivious nude.
Okay. Where are we in Rings of Power?
Oh, Rings of Power, we're at the penultimate episode. So second to last.
Of season
two. And the pacing and antagonism this season has been absolutely incredible.
Right.
It's really interesting to see that the engagement dips and slows whenever they go to the Southlands, which have become Mordor, and they deal with the humans there.
Right.
And also the Harfoots, which is a type of halfling, and their journeys with the Stranger, who's very obviously Gandalf. People must stop being like, maybe it's Saruman. Like, it's fucking Gandalf. He's learning about the secret fire. It's fucking Gandalf. So it's really like cool to see like how, oh, those stories are not, all those subplots are not working as well as the subplot we come to on this side, where it's Sauron being a gaslighting, manipulative, narcissistic motherfucker. Oh my God. He is such a good antagonist.
Really?
You'd think that like taking Sauron in the books, who's just meant to be like this embodiment of evil that's not corporeal ever.
Yeah.
It's like meant to be an idea.
Look at us with these big words. Yeah, what's corporeal?
Taking form and shape
in
the world. So it's like a spirit, this thing that you can't see.
Okay.
Yeah. So in the books, that never happens, right? Sauron's this idea. It's like,
wait, so people, when the Stranger came, and in the early episodes of season one, was that the sort of the person that sort of landed in that sort of asteroid?
Yes.
Okay. So people aren't sure whether it's Gandalf or Sauron.
No. Like everyone, he was the, what's the word for a distraction? Like to send your attention off in the wrong direction.
Oh, like almost like a MacGuffin of sorts. Yeah,
no.
Or like a, it's like a red misdirection.
Herring. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's like that was what the Stranger was meant to be.
Okay.
But then at the end of that season, Halbrand, the human that was with Galadriel, revealed himself to be Sauron. So we know that he's Sauron. This guy, and also at the end of that season, he's called an Istari, which is one of the wizards.
But the person that you say is definitely Gandalf, what do other people think he is?
They think he's like one of the blue wizards, or they think he's, because they're five Istari in Middle Earth. He might be Saruman, he might be Radagast the
Saruman.
Brown.
I was getting confused between Saruman and Sauron.
Yeah, let's call him Sauron, like they do in the show.
Sauron.
Yeah, everyone's pissed off with how much they roll their eyes on this, which is really funny.
It'll make very good Afrikaans.
Essentially,
people.
What's great about this season is that when you watch the films, and I suppose if you get into the lore, which not a lot of people will do, you just hear about the Three Rings for Elves, Seven for Dwarves, Nine for Men.
Yes.
And then Sauron made the One Ring to rule them all. And you're like, how? How the fuck did that work? Like, were they just like, oh, pretty ring?
Yeah.
And then they were just like, thanks, Sauron. Yeah, come in. Like, take our jewels, whatever. You know? And it gets into like physically how his spirit is put into the rings and how he manipulates this elven smith, Celebrimbor, to making these controlling rings that possess people very much in the same way that the ring does in the film.
Right.
And it's all about the illusions, his trickery, how he deceives people, how he gaslights them into thinking certain things, like he's here to help. You know, Celebrimbor's not good enough because he's not making the rings for him fast enough. And at the same time, we had the battle episode now where this elven, like, I suppose, like leader of orcs from the Mordor side of the world is an elf. New character named Adar.
Okay.
Okay. Who murders Sauron at the start of the season,
right,
like a couple thousand years ago, whatever. And this guy is now like, I'm going to fucking kill Sauron because he's back. I thought I killed this motherfucker.
Right.
So he brings up this army to Eregion, where Celebrimbor lives. And at the same time, what you have going on in Moria, the Dwarven Kingdom, is that the King Durin has one of the seven Dwarven rings.
Okay.
And he's just like, Mithril, I'm going to mine. I'm going to mine. I'm going to mine. I'm going to get all this money. I'm going to control all the, like, get bounties from the rest of the other Dwarven kingdoms. And then you're like, oh, fuck, the Balrog was in the trailer. Moria's going to get fucked up by the Balrog, dude. We're going to see that.
Right.
And the whole thing with this episode with the battle is now you have the elves who need the dwarves to come and support them to fight these orcs. They can't show up because Durin's having his own little fucking battle. But what I'd like to say is that everyone, I've seen quite a few people talking about this. We kind of wish it was on cinema because you see this like Peter Jackson, Lord of the Rings level battle.
Yes.
happen, and it's like absolutely fucking mind-blowingly good. It's huge.
Speaking of Lord of the Rings battles, I'll never forget when I think we were going from the second film to the third film, they had cast members of Lord of the Rings on like TRL, Total Request Live, which was like, you know, the big news show of MTV that happened in Times Square. Like everybody tuned in for
the one
show.
Against the open window.
Yeah, against the open window. So if you were in New York, you'd try and see what celebrity you could see that day on TRL. And I'll never forget them saying, and so there are going to be some big battle scenes in this next one.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm going to blunder the battle names. I don't know them, but I'll never forget one of the cast members going, oh yeah, it's going to make the battle of whatever look like two girls fighting in a shower. And I was like, that's funny. I like that.
I love how you've remembered that for like 30 years.
Yeah, I've got no idea which battle he was referring to and which one he was comparing it to, but I just love that expression. It's going to look like two girls fighting in a shower. But yeah, listening to you talk, I mean, it's amazing how in depth you are. It's amazing how much depth to the world there is. It felt like I was listening to someone speak in another language.
No, but I feel like very
much
it, yeah.
I very much respect the fact that it's got this meat for you.
No, it's there. I think that there's a cool discussion to be had around adaptation and like how we can tell these stories and how they can be changed, even though they didn't get the rights to the books, they only got the rights to the appendices. You know, and how they like use that, they acknowledge it, and they like make new characters and they make the story work.
And they would pull it off if they gave a shit.
Yes.
Yes.
And they would pull it off if they really were true fans that wanted to honor it.
Yeah.
Then it would show. I think that's the thing. It's like when you look at what could be a Harry Potter TV show coming out.
Yeah.
If it's a cash grab, it'll show.
Yes.
If they really give a shit, it'll show.
Okay. Yeah.
I thought something that could be interesting now, the complete opposite of a big, meaty, lore, crazy narrative show. I watched a little bit of Love is Blind over the shoulder of my fiance, Leslie. And that, of course, is the dumbest, silliest reality TV show you could possibly choose. But it had me realize something, and I thought this could be an interesting thing to chat about for a moment. We were watching the UK edition of Love is Blind. Okay. So it's the exact same formula, which is a bunch of single people date each other in these pods where they can't see and they just form connections.
Okay.
And it ends with them matching up where they actually go on a knee and want to get engaged with this person that they've never met.
Right.
That's the premise.
You have to propose to someone you've never seen.
Yeah, if you feel like you're ready to go into the next part of the experiment. They keep calling it the experiment in the show. I don't know whether there's people that don't get engaged. I think they just, if they don't match up, they don't go on to the next part.
Okay.
Then the doors come up and you see this person for the first time. So that part's interesting. That kind of happens halfway through the season. Then they have to live together as they then build up to a big day where they all get married.
Right.
And at the altar, the question becomes like, is love blind? Do you want to marry this person?
Right.
And the season will end with people going, I'm in, yes. Or someone going yes, the other person going no. And so they make this juicy meal of the wedding, right?
Why does it have to be a wedding? Why can't they just date?
The point is for all these contestants, these are people that actually like want to get married. They want to go on to the next part of their life.
Yes.
But the thing I want to bring up is reality TV shows across different territories. And which ones are good at which? So the American one, I thought was interesting. The Americans are very good at the drama.
Right.
Whether it's like Survivor or cooking shows or certain things, they love to build the drama of it. So with Love is Blind, it's like some stupid shit about how they're not connecting, but they'll make a huge drama meal out of it. But the British one in this case was better because they could, I think the British are better at sentimental shows.
Oh, right.
They can do emotion. So like the British do like, famously they've got that like bake-off where they just bake shit. But like, why does that work?
Yeah.
It's not the drama. It's not the.
Yeah, why is that the most popular show in the UK?
Intense drama of it. It's just that the British can do that, like, emotional, beautiful, charming connection. So they do a little better at this. Love Island is also a big one where you've got to go and singles meet up. When you watch like the Love Island Australia, it's shit. Because they don't do the heartfelt love the same. But the Australians are very good at following the rules. So they can build. So that's why like The Block is really good for me in Australia. That's why I like MasterChef is really good, because it's all about like perfection.
It was a Grand
Design, like being the best.
Grand Design show set in Australia, and that was a really fucking good season.
Okay. And like one of the more famous reality shows to come out of Australia is the security at the airport. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, it's interesting how they can do, like the Australians can do a very particular kind of reality show. Yeah. The British are very good at another one. Like Jimmy Fallon and Jimmy Kimmel, like they play like games in those talk shows.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is so interesting, where a Parkinson and then now Graham Norton, they just sit on the couch.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's as interesting, it's even more interesting.
Yes.
Because there's like a deeper heartfelt connection and there's like research and love. It's just interesting how those things are different.
Yes.
Yeah. So I just thought it's worth bringing that up, and if anyone had any thoughts on it. But that's my observation.
Yeah.
Take it or leave it. let's hear about Twilight of the Gods.
Oh, yeah. So this is old Zachary Snyder, old Zack Snackadoodle, his new show.
Okay.
On Netflix. It's an animated series.
But now the big one was meant to be Rebel Moon, right?
That's come and gone. They released the director's cut of that,
didn't they?
Okay, never watched any of it.
Not going to.
I don't care.
Yeah, it's a big sort of space opera that didn't become an opera at all.
Well, I think they're still doing more of them. It must have gotten enough attention.
Or they sunk enough money in to just see it through.
But either way, this is all centered around Norse mythology.
What kind of animation?
2D animation. It's very Genndy Tartakovsky.
Okay.
So the guy who did Samurai Jack and Primal. Have you watched Primal?
Yeah.
Primal is awesome.
Primal's fucking
It's
great.
That, but like 100 times hornier, because Zack Snyder's a horny little weirdo.
Okay. But what's our new word?
Lascivious.
Lascivious. Yeah. Is it lascivious?
No, it's more just straight up horny than lascivious.
Okay.
Lascivious might be like showing the thigh. Yeah.
Suggestive. As opposed to like...
Yeah, it's like lascivious feels like it's got undertones. Let me actually just check this before
I
broadcast.
Okay, so basically the story is there is a human dude who's like the king of his village sort of thing, and a woman who is a jotun, which is a giant. In Norse mythology, giant doesn't necessarily mean big. They're just like a certain different race of people. And they're about to get married, so they go back to her village. They go back to Jotunheim. And Thor rocks up.
Jotunheim.
It's where the giants are from.
Okay.
And Thor rocks up and he's like, where's Thor? I mean, not where's Thor. He's like, where's Loki? And they're like, I don't know. Loki's not here. Fuck off. We don't like gods. Get out of here. And he's like, where's Loki? And then he just murders everyone. Just like splatters everyone. Because he's trying to find Loki. And the only two survivors are this woman and the guy supposed to be her husband. And then it's like, we're going to go kill Thor. And that's the plot.
Okay.
So the whole plot is... gathering an army to go and attack Asgard to kill Thor.
Which seems frivolous. Because, how do you kill the...
Well, you know, gods in these mythology aren't necessarily like...
untouchable.
Yeah. They're not the god that we think of in Western things.
It's based off a game?
No.
Oh, okay.
That's God of War, which I do want to talk about.
Okay.
Also around Norse mythology. But it's fine. It's not as like, it's not the worst Zack Snyder thing ever made.
Hectic.
It's also not the best.
Okay.
Yes.
But yeah, it's kind of entertaining. The animation's really good. It's super violent. Just keep that in mind.
Sure.
It's incredibly violent. That's it's not an animated show for the kids.
It's very on brand for Zack Snyder.
Yes.
Horny and violence.
Yeah.
Sure. Speaking of gods, I mean, I'm still watching Chaos. We come to it every now and again, which is now over in Greek god.
Yeah.
Territory.
Yes.
Yeah. That's also very dense.
But also a bunch of horny motherfuckers.
Somewhat, yeah. But also just, it's dense.
Okay.
And bizarre and weird. And the show just picks apart at how sort of bizarre and weird the Greek tragedies and the Greek stories are.
Yes.
But we're into it. We're following it. It's like we're completing it. We're coming back to it, which I think is interesting. We being myself and Leslie.
Yeah.
Which on the other hand, as I said earlier, I chose Wolves.
Okay.
Which is to point out interesting. At the heart of it is this grammatical error.
Wolves.
It's wolves. So like W-O-L-F-S.
Yeah.
As opposed to wolves, which is V-E-S.
Yeah.
So that's fucking weird.
Is there a good reason for that?
Well, to be honest, didn't finish the show because it got the movie, because it got a little bit late last night. There was about 30, 40 minutes to go. I do plan on finishing it, but there wasn't this desire to finish it.
Okay.
There wasn't this like, oh my God, can't believe it's fucking midnight.
Yes.
Someone said, interestingly, Netflix said they don't compete with anyone else. They are competing with sleep.
Yes.
It's like that's true.
Yeah.
You know, like that's your biggest adversary is people wanting to go to bed. And last night, bed won. Because Wolves is this big budget movie to some degree, but it's big budget because it's got Brad Pitt and George Clooney together.
Yes.
George Clooney is a fixer. And I think the word wolves comes from Harvey Keitel's character in Pulp Fiction, where he was the wolf, right?
And Wolf.
And he gets called to fix a situation. Mm. So this prominent politician is this woman in this hotel room, and there's a guy in his underpants who is on the floor. There's a crash, and this oak's on the floor, and he's seemingly dead.
Okay.
And she calls George Clooney because she says, I got your number once from someone, and I hear you're the guy to solve problems. Right. And it's that classic, like, I'm the perfect guy. I know all the questions
it's
to
like
ask.
It's like a slick montage of
slick,
him. Yeah.
Slick thing. It's a little bit like, it's that fantastical character, like an assassin, you know? We fucking watch all these movies with Netflix and everything about, you know, the assassin and the way that they do their job as the assassin.
Yeah.
That's what made the movie recently, The Hitman, so good is that it shat on and made fun of the very trope of these kinds of characters.
Okay. Yes.
These people who, you know, who do this bizarre thing with their life.
Yes.
So he's a fixer and he comes in and he's meticulous and he works it all out. And then there's another knock on the door.
Right.
And this is now good old Bradley Pitt.
Right.
Who says, I'm also here to fix the problem. And it's revealed that he's hired by the hotel. Because the hotel now knows that there's a problem. And now the two of them have to work together. So it's a lovely premise.
Okay.
And there's this kind of adversary banter between these two guys that are famously very solo jobs, having to come together. But it's a little bit meh. It's a little bit like, okay, there's this couple of moments where you're like, okay, this is old. Now move on. And then they do. And you're like, okay, cool. Now you're starting to work together.
Okay.
Well, now we're starting to reveal some stuff. But what I think is interesting is that you think it's going to be a big budget set piece movie with big moments because these are characters that are traditionally in these big Hollywood movies, heists or big moments. But it actually plays out like a smaller little indie.
Okay.
Where they kind of, a lot of the movie is just them talking to each other.
Right.
In scenes that perhaps go on a bit too long.
Hey.
So
you can do that if your film is very well written.
Exactly.
Like it has to have like great
dialogue. And
there's
just a couple of moments where I was like, okay, I'm getting a bit tired of this banter.
Okay.
Or when there was a chase sequence, I was like, this is going on just a little bit too long. But the guy who made it should know what he's doing because this is the guy behind all this recent Spider-Man movies.
Oh, John Watts.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's not an amateur,
yeah.
But I think it's John Watts trying to do something a little different.
Right.
Perhaps a bit indulgent because you got these two big actors
big names,
that you want to kind of make the most of.
Yeah.
So it might not be what you expect it to be, and I also haven't finished it, so I can't quite speak on behalf of it. But not bad.
Okay.
But not astounding so far, and didn't keep me awake.
Right.
Shucks.
To you.
Okay.
Anything else to chat about?
I want to talk about God of War.
Let's do it.
And monsters.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Do you want to do that first since we're talking about TV and then I'll transition into video game.
I'll be like brief. So season two season one was Jeffrey Dahmer. Now yes. it's Eric and Lyle Menendez.
Yes.
Who were two Beverly Hills spoiled brats.
Yeah.
Essentially, that murdered their two parents with shotguns at Point Blank Ranch.
Right.
And it is incredibly gripping and well written and well acted.
Okay.
Like, amazing. Like, it's not the thing, it's not the show where sleep won for me. I was Good. I'm gonna carry on watching this. I'm so hooked.
This is the same guy behind the American Horror Stories.
Yeah, well, he's the exec producer.
Yeah, but a guy who sort of understands what's a good captivating story.
Yeah.
But adapting crazy real life moments.
Yes. So it's like nonfiction, it's true crime.
Yeah.
Basically. So it works. It works as a piece of entertainment, which is like where the waters start to get muddied because it's based on real people that are still alive, you know? For me, it's like, I think I'd say it's gripping, but problematic. It's one of the first times I've watched something where I'm like, ooh,
right.
Oh, this is iffy. This is so iffy. Because you watch and engage as a viewer, but then you realize, oh, these two boys are... We're going to assume that they're telling the truth when they say that their father sexually molested them for like their entire childhood and adolescent years, right? And this was a motive for their like revenge, their patricide and matricide of their... What's the parent one? Oh, anyways. And then they proceed to constantly sexualize and objectify them.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're naked. We see the one guy's penis in a shot. We see them having sex. And it's just like, we got to stop sexualizing sexual assault victims, guys. Yeah. Like,
okay.
It's kind of just like, this is, why are we doing this? Why are we making them objects of desire when they've been traumatized by sexual violence, you know? So there's like that iffy line. But then what it does is it takes the plaintiff's case. It initially like takes their defendant's case and tells an incredibly gripping, empathetic story.
Right.
Who's the plaintiff?
The plaintiff is the person accusing. So like these guys murdered their parents, they need to die. They need to death penalty.
And who is that? That's the state.
Oh, it's the state, yeah.
Wanting
it's the state
to,
in this case, yeah. Sorry, you interrupted me. My ADHD went away.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. No, my train of thought just like stops. It's like a full stop. But like essentially what happens is you get this incredibly gripping and empathetic case being told. I mean, like the fifth episode of the show is one shot where it's him telling his lawyer in the prison about everything. Like my dad used toothbrushes on me with Vaseline when I was 7 and all of this shit. And it's like really violent. And it's just a snail's pace track-in shots from a wide, like two shots over her shoulder. And then eventually we're over her shoulder, over the table, and we're on a big close-up on him.
Okay.
Like over a period of 25 minutes. Every other episode's 50 minutes. This one's 25 minutes.
Do they cut the things in between?
No. It's like one 25-minute shot.
Yes,
oh,
just
Jesus.
Like tracking in on this one monologue. And
that's a big swing of a decision.
It's huge.
And it works.
It works. There are moments where you're like, second screen, I want it. But then there you continue to engage with it and it's worth it. But that's like, that's extreme empathy. You're saying that as a filmmaker, we're taking these guys' side, right? Mm. And then all of a sudden, the last two episodes, they're like, oh, but. And they go with Nathan Lane's side of the story. Nathan Lane's a Vanity Fair journalist whose daughter was an actress in Poltergeist and she was brutally murdered, strangled to death.
Right.
And he's got this thing about murderers getting free and he hates their lawyer, who's this person that notoriously lets murderers get away.
Right.
And it happens at the same time as the O.J. Simpson case. And this is like all feeding into it. And then all of a sudden at the end, they're like, oh, Jose Menendez, their father.
Yes.
Was actually a guy who was trying to pull his family back together and these two boys were spoiled brats.
Right.
And then you're like, hang on a second, are you telling me to feel sorry for a sexual predator right now? So like what they're trying to do is they're trying to paint this objective picture where they're like, oh, this might be true, but that might be true. Where is the truth? They're trying to like do this blurred line thing by reenacting that side of the story.
Okay.
And reenacting their side of the story, you know, with the closed door and the muffled sounds behind the door, with the father and their son. And then you're having this side of the story where you see him being like, I'm going to make this marriage work. I'm going to do my best. Our family's going to get back together. Right. And the same events are played out from two different perspectives. So they're going for a Rashomon thing.
Okay.
But then at the same time, at the end of it, you're like, hang on a second. This guy's a sexual predator.
Yes.
Probably. And you're making me feel sorry for him right now.
Yeah, weird.
Well, that's what you're trying to do. So you're just like, same thing. I couldn't get through Dharma because it was like reenacting extreme violence against gay men.
Mm.
And I was just like, this feels gross. I don't want to watch it. But then like this does a similar thing where it's just like, why are we, what stance are you taking? What are we doing here? And it's like, it's very notorious online.
Yeah, it's almost as if they want you to sexualize them too and
yes.
be able to
and
feel sexual feelings
yeah, I think
towards
like,
them to sort of yeah empathize with the person who was.
I think that these, I can't really stomach how morally bankrupt these filmmakers are, like, in my opinion. I think it's like, I don't think it's very noble. And I think it's like rage bait.
Yes.
It's fully what they're doing. They want the online conversation. They want the libs triggered. They want the fights between both sides.
Yeah.
You know, they want to like re-engage the conversation that was happening while they were the biggest news event
yeah.
in Hollywood.
Yes.
You know? So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And I think a big part of it is that the brothers didn't have any kind of like sexual relationship or anything in real life,
no.
right? Yeah, so that's all invented.
Yes.
That's like, I think that's a big
it's
like
exactly,
sticking point
dude.
For people, and that they like created this
yes.
sexual dynamic between them in a story about sexual assault.
Yeah.
I think that's been like a big
That's
problem
what I was
people.
Wondering because there's a clip comparing the news and the show
okay.
in one of the interrogations. What's it called when the testimonies in
okay.
the trial.
Yes.
And it's like kind of even beat for beat, it's like the same pacing, the same performance, the same dialogue.
Nice.
So it's like you get into the place where you're like, oh, everything that's happening in the courtroom is like word for word exactly
yes.
the same as what happened. And they do suggest an incestuous relationship between the brothers. So I want to understand if that was like part of the plaintiff's case.
Mm.
But then, yes, you look at the marketing of the show
yeah.
and it's these two brothers kind of in a very homoerotic, like suggestive pose.
Yeah.
Shirtless,
mm.
like over each other's shoulder, holding each other. And you're kind of just like, you know, that can be seen as kind of just like two comfortable brothers.
Yes.
But at the same time, you're like, you're fucking sexualizing this. Yeah. You're suggesting like right at the offset that these are two lovers, wow. you know?
With each other.
Yeah.
Wild.
In order, and that's what the plaintiff did in order to distract them from the fact that their father wasn't a molester.
Right.
Which is like fucked up.
Okay.
Yeah,
wild.
So it's messy.
Yeah.
Messy.
Okay.
Okay.
On
so
a about
very different note.
Yes.
Very different note. So I've been playing God of War Ragnarok, speaking of
which
Norse
is
mythology.
Which is a sequel to God of War.
To God of War. Okay, yeah. I think we need like a short history lesson. God of War comes out in 2005.
Yes.
This is a game about... PlayStation 2. Yeah, PlayStation 2 era. This is a game about Greek mythology,
mm-hmm.
where you play a guy who has been tricked into killing his own family... and is now on revenge to kill a mission of revenge to kill the god of war, to kill Ares.
Okay.
He succeeds. He becomes the new god of war. But the thing about this is, so Kratos...
Do you play that guy?
Yeah, you play Kratos, who's the guy who's out for revenge.
Okay.
So imagine a dude who's got big red tattoos and he's got the worst facial hair, which is a pointy goatee.
Yes.
And then he yells, I will have revenge. And that's his entire character for like three games.
Yeah.
Cool.
He's fucking
it's
insufferable.
Like one note.
I hate Kratos. This is why I find this so interesting. I hate Kratos.
Yes.
He's a terrible character. I never finished God of War 3.
Oh,
because
wild.
I didn't want him to win.
Oh, crazy.
I yeah. don't want this guy to
Can
win
you
because
choose
I dislike
to be
him so
other
much.
People?
No.
Okay.
So now we fast forward to 2018. And they release God of War. It's just called God of War. Now it's centered around Norse mythology.
Same story, though. It's the same
plot
line.
You play the same character. It's
yeah.
It's still Kratos,
okay.
who was the Greek god of war. Now he's killed the entire fucking pantheon, left Greece. He's now wound up in Norse place, Norway, wherever
yeah,
it is. I don't
yeah,
know.
I don't know where it is.
Settle
yeah.
said where it is. But now they've
Norway.
Taken this character.
Yeah. Now known as modern-day Norway.
Yeah. This character who, I mean, a lot of people like old Kratos. I hate old Kratos. And they've changed it. And now, instead of a story about a dude who's going, I'll have my revenge for three games, it's the story about a man trying to be a father and regret and
Okay.
You know, I'm trying to think of other adjectives, but they changed Kratos from a dude I hated who I didn't want to win to one of my favorite characters in any incredible medium ever.
There was like, obviously more feedback like yours, which was like, I'm tired of this guy.
I think it's also just the case of like, we want to like reboot this thing essentially. Like we want to like start from scratch, but this is a beloved character who's associated with the franchise. How do we like invigorate this thing in a way that makes it more interesting?
Yeah. You give him a son.
You give him a son. And then, yeah, the start of the game, essentially the original, the first one, the 2018 game is Kratos' wife has just died. You're building her funeral pyre, and the thing is she has told Kratos, take our son and spread my ashes on the tallest mountain in the realm, in all the realms.
Yes.
So it becomes, oh, we need to go to that mountain. Oh, no, wait, the tallest mountain is actually in a different realm.
Yes.
We need to figure out how to get to Jotunheim.
Yes.
And it's just this, oh, it's an incredible story.
It's amazing. I've finished it as well.
I've played it multiple times.
It is like next level.
It's an amazing story. And then that game ends with like, there's like three big like plot bombs at the end of that.
It's insane.
It was
like
Fimbulwinter, which is the endless winter that leads to Ragnarok.
Yes.
Thor.
Yes.
And Loki.
Yes.
That drop with Loki is like,
it's fucking insane.
What the fuck? Is
it the kind of game you sort of wander through the world, you got to do certain things, you got to pick up certain stuff?
Yes. It's non-linear.
Yes, so it's
there is
less,
a linear storyline, but you can do whatever you want in whatever order.
It's more what they call a Metroidvania, which is, it's not strictly open world, it's more like branching. It like branches into different like set levels, basically.
Yes.
So when you say like I played it multiple times, when you played it the second time, you went down a different route.
Yeah, there's like, you know, there's a thing these days, there's a thing called New Game Plus with games where you can like keep all the things from your first playthrough, but start the game again from the beginning, and it's more difficult and that sort of thing. But now the game is essentially, they're trying to prevent Ragnarok.
What is Ragnarok in Norse mythology again?
End of the world.
It's the end of the world.
It's the destruction of all the realms.
And also it's the prophecy where Odin's going to die.
Yes, Odin dies.
Like,
so
Thor
dies.
Yeah, so my only reference is Ragnarok the movie. So
Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah. That's when all Cate Blanchett comes down and
exactly
starts it.
And I think what they did with this is that first God of War game from 2018 Thor isn't in it, Odin isn't in it. None of the characters that you like have an association with from Marvel are in it. Mm. It's all like the lesser known characters. It's Balder and Magni and Modi.
Yes.
And Freya and all these characters. And then this one, now that they've established their version of this, they can now introduce in Ragnarok their version of Thor and their version of Odin.
Yeah, and you're not just imagining
and they're
Anthony Hopkins.
Completely different.
Completely different. Who's the actor that plays Odin?
I can't remember.
You'll recognize him in a second.
Like Thor is this actor. Like huge fat dude with this like messy red hair.
Yeah.
And he's like incredible. Odin's kind of like this like small old man. He's like a little old New York man. It's just like the characterization's great. The thing for me that makes it so compelling is they took Kratos from this dude that I hate to literally one of the most interesting characters in like anything right now.
Okay.
It's so exciting.
No, the extent of gaming world's amazing and it's kind of deep love.
Yeah,
for you, it feels like you're watching like a movie in a sense.
Yeah, that you're playing a movie.
That you get to manipulate.
You get to interact
with. This is the guy that plays Odin. Richard Schiff.
Can you look up Thor? Just look, not the actor, but just like the design of Thor.
Yeah.
It's such a great design. But now the question is, they've said this is the end of like the Norse like storyline.
Yeah.
So where does it go next?
What
mythology? And a lot of people are saying Egypt, but I'm like, we've seen Egypt done a million times.
Yeah.
Go to South America. Go to like Maya, the Mayans or the Aztecs
like
or something like that. That would be so fucking cool. That would
be amazing, dude.
That would be so cool.
Look at this motherfucker. Look at this chunky piece of man.
Yeah.
I love him.
Yeah.
Such a great design. But yeah, it's just an exciting... Yeah, gaming now with like the way they tell stories and everything is like so interesting.
It's 100% a medium to put alongside films,
yeah,
I think.
I think it's reaching that point.
It's like as cinematic, it's as deep, if not deeper. You lose yourself in that game, man.
Yeah, God of War, Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah.
Games like that are just like... Sometime I want to talk about Alan Wake 2.
Yes.
Like maybe next time on, I'll talk about Alan Wake 2, another just... incredible.
You'll love
game.
It.
Yeah, it'd be nice to understand gaming more. It's never been something on my radar, but I've the deepest, greatest respect for it.
Yeah. I still think that's something we should do for like a YouTube thing, is just sit Russell down with the video game.
Yeah, make him play like Alan Wake.
I think it can't be something with like complicated mechanics, because it's just going to be overwhelming. Right. It needs to be something really simple. Portal.
Yes.
Or the Stanley Parable. I would love to see what Russell does with the Stanley Parable.
Yeah, this sounds like a great idea.
Because it's dead simple mechanic-wise.
Yeah.
But just to see where you go with it would be so fascinating.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, right, we should do that.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for a lovely day.
No.
Hell yeah.
It's great to catch up with you guys.
Mm.
And thank you for listening, everyone. Yes. Thank you for sticking around. Our home base is thevideostore.co.za. And come on back.
Come on down.
On Tuesdays is our clerks chat, where it's like this. It's just us. And the occasional Thursday will be a guest episode every now and again. All right.
Lekker.
Magic, guys.
Nice.
See you soon.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah.